Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. Oh, man. What's up, brother?
Oh, breathe again.
Yeah. Boy, something tells me this one might be tough to keep under an hour.
This World Cup is absolutely bonkers.
I'm actually, and this so fits my personality, I think, for people who listen to this podcast, I'm preemptively sad for when this thing is over.
100%. I can see the gaping hole on the horizon that's in my life.
Like, I'm sad that there's no games tomorrow and Thursday.
Premier League transfer news is going to be one hell of a drudge compared to this.
I know.
I don't even think about it.
I don't know what it is. I mean, I guess it's a combination of so many things. There have been a lot of goals scored. There have been so many dramatic late goals, controversial decisions, talent really on full display. Interesting. This tournament, to me, I really don't think we're getting caught up in the moment saying it because we were critical. I think we were semi-critical of the European Championships 2 years ago. This has been one of the most enjoyable tournaments that I think I've experienced. And that's saying a lot since my team is not in this.
From the dramatic games to just the unpredictable performances from teams we'd written off, let's be honest.
Yeah.
To even the ball. I love this ball. The way the ball moves. Everything about this tournament has captured me in
the
a way.
The ball.
The ball. Seriously. I tried to explain this to a friend.
You got the Jabulani right there next to you.
Terrible ball. Oh. Terrible ball.
All right.
And it's the bazooka, actually.
Oh, that's not the Jabulani.
No, it's the bazooka. Oh. I was trying to explain this to a friend today. I can go back in World Cups by the ball. Like, I remember the 1990 ball, what that looked. USA 94, Euro 2000. I remember tournaments in the development of the Adidas ball, which is probably weird and nerdy. But everything about this tournament has kind of captured my imagination.
It's been so fun, and it certainly did not stop today as the round of 16 has now gone final. Two games today. We'll get to them right now. We'll start. I guess we'll go chronologically here. Sweden 1, Switzerland 0.
Feeling this is going to get the short end of the stick.
Perhaps. Perhaps it might. But look, here, in some ways it shouldn't. This is a fairly sizable upset for Sweden. And you know what? I was kind of, with this matchup, I was sort of damned if I did, damned if I didn't, either way, because I was critical of Sweden in our group preview somewhat for not having brought Zlatan. I said when... And I'm saying right now, they have proven that wrong. But I was also critical in our World Cup preview of Switzerland, saying that I didn't think that they were for real. So no matter who won this game, I was going to look bad one way or another. I kind of preferred that it be Sweden.
I wanted to put my foot through the TV today when Fox... Threw back to the studio and Alexi Lalas even mentioned Zlatan's name.
Oh, come on, JJ. That's so unfair to not even look at that as a storyline. They chose to not bring arguably the greatest player in their country's history.
What do you mean they chose? He wasn't involved in qualifying.
But he wanted to return to the team and they said no. That is a story. And now they're in the quarterfinals. That's not a storyline? You're looking for reasons to get on Fox if you're saying that.
No, I'll say it about Twitter too. The notification comes up on Twitter from a game I've already seen, which is annoying. Sweden advances to the quarterfinal without Zlatan Ibrahimovic. What is this? This is just nonsense. Let's look at the team on the merits of what they've done over these games, and they absolutely deserve to be in the quarterfinals.
Of course they do. No one's saying anything to the contrary.
He couldn't play in this team anyway. There is no way he could play in this side the way they work. The way they almost completely sacrifice the personal and the self for the team ethic. Look at Emil Forsberg, who was the leader in assists in the Bundesliga 2 seasons ago. This guy has been almost like... contracted into a ball of what he can be. And yeah, do I think sometimes he should be let off the leash and could this team do better? And then I stop myself. No, this team is doing fine, you know, as it is. Look at Lindelof and Granqvist today. Massive performances. There is no way this guy could play in this team, and it's lazy narrative to talk about the lion who works for Visa.
Well, agree on all counts now, but I'm saying if Fox or whoever isn't mentioning the fact that they're doing this without him... then I think that's almost bereft in their duties. They at least have to mention it, JJ. The guy wanted to come back onto the team. They said, no, we don't want you. And now look at them in the quarterfinals. That is a story.
I think harping on about it, I've just heard too much about it.
Who's harping on? People have said one thing about it, and then they talk about the game.
We're 4 games deep into the championship. They said no to him in, what, April or May? Whenever it was.
But the World Cup is now.
Oh,
of course you would talk about it now. Stop faking outrage.
I'm not faking outrage. I'm not faking outrage. I'm sick hearing about him.
Well, let's talk about the game itself. The first half was really interesting.
You know who should be on the ESPN body issue? Who? Toivonen. Beautiful man.
It's a handsome team. There's no question about that. The first half was interesting to me because there were stretches where it felt like Sweden were doing everything in their power to not score. I mean, they were presented with chances. Marcus Berg had a great chance, and it just seemed like they're flailing wildly at the ball. Yeah. It just seemed like they weren't focused, especially in their finishing ability. And I was wondering if it was going to eventually come back and bite them because Switzerland do have some players like Shaqiri, obviously, who can bite you.
I tweeted out at the end exactly that. I thought, now in these final moments is the perfect time for a Shaqiri absolute blaster of a shot, and you could see it happening. And even, like, if you look at the chances Jamali had in the first half, oh, Andrew, it opens up and he just blasted over the bar, and it was about the best move that Switzerland managed to put together. And here's, let's say we were wrong, we completely underestimated what Sweden were. We knew they would be resolute, but they've found a way to win. And I'm just wondering now, does that goal for Forsberg, even though he didn't hit it that well, it deflected into the net, almost seems like it should have been an own goal in
yes.
a way.
Yes, it should.
Because it was going to be a routine save for the goalkeeper.
And this is the tournament of own goals, and it needs to go down as one.
Well, back in the day, we called them a deflection. We'd note the deflection, but we would give Forsberg the credit. But whatever, the way he drops the shoulder to create a chance. I said this against when I saw him play against Germany, and also a little bit when I saw him play against Mexico. He has the ability to give that team what it, let's be honest, Berg and Toivonen can't do.
A little bit of creativity.
Right. And all they need is a little bit, because they are so resolute at the back that eventually they're going to wear teams down who won't be able to get through them, and they'll have that chance, and maybe he's the guy that can take the chance.
Yeah. It's just, you know, there were moments in this game today where you thought, like I said, that they were kind of giving it away. Lustig played in a ball, I don't remember who it was for Sweden, but instead of going down, you know, bringing the head down and maybe going for a diving header,
instead
kind of kicks the leg up and just, again, flails.
Was that Ekdal?
Was that Ekdal? It might have been.
But again, that was just a massive breakdown in technique. I honestly don't. I know Stewie Holden said he should have thrown his head on it. I think it was curving out a bit. Andrew, it was he was if he was able to take it that well on the volley, he should have been able to put it on net, and he couldn't. And again, that's just their problem. They only have Toivonen possibly. And Forsberg, who are, I mean, Berg is in a drought, an absolute drought.
Yes.
So that's all they've got. But the point is, they'll stay in a game long enough with their organization to create that one chance. And who knows what will happen in the quarterfinal.
Yeah, and look, it certainly helped them that they had an opponent in Switzerland who's not necessarily ruthless in their own right. It's interesting, the goal that Forsberg did eventually score, and we'll talk about Spain coming up, but when I watched that goal, it might have even been mentioned in the telecast, but I couldn't help but thinking Spain couldn't have done this. And I know, look, Spain
did have... A different scenario.
Spain didn't even get to that point. But Spain from 20 yards out couldn't have forced a shot and maybe gotten a deflection. It just seemed like Sweden was... Other teams are at least willing to do what Spain were totally unwilling to do.
Ah, come on. Like, Russia would have had three more players there. Like, Switzerland do play more open than Russia. Spain would not have got into this and didn't get into the center like that. We'll talk about Spain later.
This for Sweden, they've now won back-to-back World Cup matches for the first time since 1958.
You know what that means?
They're going to the final?
Yep.
Well, they did then. It was in Sweden, though. I'm sure that helped them.
I'm sure it did.
And for Switzerland, they do go out in the end.
Which, and I don't, again, we talked about this already, and I'm not accusing any Swiss player of not putting it in a round of 16 game. That's not the case. With Sweden are a tough team to play against. But the passion and the fire of that second game against Serbia, we haven't seen that Switzerland since. We haven't seen them play like men possessed. And I'm just wondering now, you know, was that their final? Did they expend all their energies in winning that game knowing that they would have had 4 points after that, which they did.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for them because they haven't been to a quarterfinal since 1954 when they hosted the tournament. And we keep talking about that side of the bracket. But really, when are Switzerland going to face Sweden or a team like that necessarily again in the round of 16? This was a chance for them.
The fans were deflated.
Yeah.
Absolutely deflated. And look, that team is probably... Look, Barami probably won't be around the next time. Zaha probably will. So will Shaqiri. But there's a couple of statesmen that will probably move on. This was a good chance for them, definitely.
Yeah, certainly was. And it is a chance that they missed. We move from that game to the other.
Lordy.
Oh, boy. Penalties. When the goal happened for Colombia, I was watching with a few people, and I said, this is it. It's following
the script.
Can I
read you the text that you sent me?
Sure, because I was crestfallen.
You were, and we'll get into that. We will get into that. Yeah, this was the text. If they lose, this is from Andrew Gundling, an American man. Mm-hmm. If they lose, England will simply never recover from this. I said, never. The country will sink beneath the waves. They cannot lose. I will not allow it, says Andy. Big old Spursy Andy.
Spursy Andy was in full effect today. But you know what? English JJ was in a little bit of effect too, because the game ended and immediately said, no, you've got to do this, and put this together and put this music under it. We've got to play this. So here it is, your penalty montage of England exercising.
My ode to Albion.
Their demons. You've got to hold and give.
Back in the score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Only Hatton.
No.
Argentina go through and England go out.
Here's the waiting over here for Portugal. It is. Portugal are World Cup semi-finalists and England, as usual, lose on a penalty shootout. Can he make a count? Yes!
It's a nervous one. I've never really been in a situation like that before, but I felt like I had to score after the header I missed at the end there, so I'm thankful I scored that one.
Demons exercise. They had been 0-3 in World Cup penalty shootouts before. That was the most for any country who had been in three or more to not have a win.
We're not even talking about European Championship defeats.
Where they were 1-4, right? I believe England are 1-7 in major tournament penalty shootouts. And then today happened, and now they are 2-8. I didn't think it was going to go that way, especially, I mean, obviously when Jordan Henderson stepped up and missed. But it all turned around, crossbar for Colombia, save for Pickford, and Eric Dyer playing the role of hero today for his country.
I tweeted, Shakespeare never wrote anything like England at a major tournament after the Yerry Mina goal. And I stand by that.
Oh, yeah.
They are, even in that little montage there, they are absolutely must-watch TV.
But that's the thing. You say Shakespeare never wrote it, but like it feels like everyone has written it. The script is rewritten year after year after year for them. And they were following it to a T. Now, this one would have been particularly brutal because they were there. I mean, they were into stoppage time. They knew that it was Sweden that they'd be coming up with next. They had a hand on the quarterfinals, and then it's Mina again on another corner kick.
But put the penalty in the larger pantheon of England disasters. You know, the food poisoning in 1970, the hand of God in 86, the media going after Bobby Robson in 90. You know, all those things. Put them all together, and you've got this tale of tragedy, really. And today, the first major step to suggest that hashtag it's coming home is a real thing was Dyer slotting that penalty in via the flapping hand of Ospina. He got a hand on it.
He did. He got about three fingers to it, but it just wasn't quite enough. This is England's first quarterfinal appearance in the World Cup since 2006, where they went out on penalties to Cristiano Ronaldo in Portugal. Ronaldo hitting the winning penalty for that. A few things jumped to my mind about this game. The first one being, are we still mad at Gareth Southgate? I feel like I didn't hear much from that chorus earlier today, especially, and we'll talk about Belgium too, but the way Belgium puttered through the first 60 minutes of that one, how did the momentum serve them? Well, it took a miracle for them to come back against Japan.
Well, I feel in this tournament, ideas of momentum and rest and, ooh, this team's had more days, or, ooh, this team's played weak in selection, or he shouldn't have done, it doesn't mean anything.
Of course not.
It means nothing. It's guff.
He did the right thing, now, he faced the criticism, and they are now reaping the benefits, because like I just said,
Whoa.
All right, so they're playing Sweden instead of Brazil. You're going to sit here and tell me that that's not reaping the benefits?
Well, I think...
Come on, man.
No, I know. But it's worth actually noting at this moment before we go into a little bit of depth in the game. Henry Winter, the noted journalist, tweeted this out. Gareth Southgate on England injuries, cramp, exhaustion, etc. after that epic. It's like a scene from MASH in there, the England dressing room. So they paid for their hard-fought going the distance game against Colombia tonight. There's no question. Now, look, England, I thought, were the only team that tried to play in the first and second half. Colombia played for 10 minutes of the regular time, of the regular 90. 10 minutes. The rest was a mixture of disjointed, albeit decent defending with dispiriting tactics and complete, as we say on this show, sh-housery. And then for 10 minutes when they realised they were going out, they somehow pulled out this amazing volley from Uribe, which was, I'm not sure if it's going in or not, but Jordan Pickford can't not make that save. And it's an unbelievable save.
Yep.
For even if it is drifting wide, how can he possibly know? Amazing save. And in the corner, Yerry Mina heads home. And then it changes. The first half of extra time, it's all Colombia, and you feel as if they've blown this. England are as Rob Stone so eloquently put it, the Colombians smell blood in the water. And that's what it felt like. England were better in the second half of extra time, and then we went to penalties. And as we know, penalties is a lottery. Or it isn't a lottery, depending on how you look at it.
Well, Jordan Pickford talked about that afterwards, and he said that they had been doing research on these players, and every player except one, it might have been Falcao, I think, followed the script of which way the England coaching staff told Pickford to dive.
Yeah.
He only made one save, but the scouting report certainly helped.
Right. We had some lemon on Twitter afterwards trying to tell me that the save from Bacca with the hand, the flailing hand, was not a good save. Okay. Because it had been done in the tournament already. I'm not sure it had.
So they can't both be so good saves? No.
But see, incredible, absolutely incredible stuff. And then wanted me to say that Ospina save, which was a great save,
yeah,
was better. You know, this kind of stuff that goes on.
Maybe it was. I don't know. They were both excellent. Pretty much any save in a penalty shootout is going to be at least a good save. You won't even concede that?
Yeah.
Come on, guy.
How did you feel about Henderson when he was stepping up to
who,
it?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Well, I hated that he missed because, as I'm sure you'll mention, I couldn't have been more English during this game.
Oof.
So I didn't want him to miss, but like, because it's you, I didn't fully hate it because of all the ribbing, the Spurs ribbing. That's one, by the way, someone needs to find Tony Adams for comment. We just have to.
We must hear from
Spurs
Tony Adams.
Spurs players went 3-for-3 in the shootout, plus Kane's penalty make earlier in the game. So 4-for-4. Kane, his 6 World Cup goals are already second all time for England behind Gary Lineker's 10.
Yeah.
Just in this tournament, he's now second all-time in England World Cup scoring. It's incredible.
Not that he should, but he could legitimately go to Gary Lineker's house and steal his golden boot from the 1986 World Cup because he's already got 6. Yes. Well, I need to collect my thoughts here for 1 second. Mm-hmm. I had something to say about Henderson. Yeah, back to Henderson.
Yeah.
He's like flicking the ball up, doing little keepy-ups, and I thought, ooh, he's confident. He had his head down. You know, he's trying to relax himself. This was some routine he'd worked out. Andrew, when I saw his face, he looked like a ghost, absolutely daunted. I knew he was going to miss. I absolutely knew he was going to miss.
It's so unfair, though, because you're right, he did miss, but does that mean that it was a poorly taken penalty? I mean, look, obviously it could have been better.
It could have been better,
but
we
just said it forced an amazing save from David Ospina. So if it can't be an amazing save and a terrible penalty, right? I mean,
yeah. But so, my original point starting out this is it's just so fresh in my head, all the things are whizzing around. England weren't let play extremely well because Colombia brought them down to a level that... Here's our Tim Vickery and what he had to say. Colombia got exactly what they deserved, and Pekerman should be ashamed of himself. The team was capable of more, even without James. I got to agree with them. They were so negative tonight, Andrew, in everything. Attach the word negative to soccer, they tick every box.
Tonight they did, and I would echo a lot of Tim Vickery saying that. I do think he downplays a little bit them not having their best and most creative player.
Yeah, but
available
does that mean
them.
You have to go absolute
no,
negative?
Exactly, and that's why ultimately I do agree with him. But it hurts. I mean, look, not having James Rodriguez against a team like England is certainly a factor. But you're right; they still have Cuadrado, they still have Falcao, they're still solid in defense with Davinson Sanchez. It's still a very good team. There's no question about that.
They couldn't pass the ball for long periods. Then they didn't try. They isolated Falcao. They didn't get Quintero near him, which needed to happen for them to create anything in the final third. I just subscribe to the view that this Colombia team can go home and think, all right, we didn't give that our full shot. We maybe pulled the oars in a little bit when James was ruled out.
Maybe, yeah. And that's the thing. They're going to feel hard done by The 2014 World Cup, Falcao's not there. The 2018 World Cup, Hamas isn't really there. I mean, he played in spurts, but he...
Well, he had that great game against Poland.
Yes, but, you know, barely played the first and third games, didn't play at all against England. You know, it's they've got this great group of players, and for whatever, you know, because of injuries, that's kind of sabotaged and submarined their chances of being able to do something with it. Now, having said that, who could have ever foreseen Yerry Mina? He tonight he became the fifth defender since 1966 with at least three goals scored in a single World Cup. And he did that just through the first four games.
Three monster headers. And this one was almost identical to the one against Senegal, except the difference with the one against Senegal is the guy on the post for England who was Trippier tried to head it up over the bar. The guy for Senegal, whose name escapes me, leaned. Almost
very nonchalant.
Nonchalant, yeah. I mean, why are you there, brother, if you're not going to try and flick it up?
Trippier almost made the play, too.
Mm. But it's the downward force.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, Barca fans have got to look at this guy. He had an excellent game tonight. His pass completion, which is going to be vital for a team like Barcelona, was excellent. I'll tell you, if they don't want him, I'll have him at Liverpool.
Six yellow cards tonight for Colombia in this game. Did they sort of lose their way throughout this? I mean, it felt like Mark Geiger, throughout, especially the first half, was on the verge of losing control of this one. You might even say that he did.
Geiger negotiated this one, somehow came out the right side of it, I think. But VAR did not help him. VAR let him down massively. On the Barrios headbutt. Andrew, how is that not a red?
I thought the same thing.
For God's sake, like.
And then Jordan Henderson almost had one of his own.
Where
later.
He lets his head
he
back.
He kind of just puts his head back.
Whatever argument you can make about the Henderson one, that it was the guy was crowding into him a little bit and it was just him stepping back. You can't make that argument with Barrios,
no.
Who did a double headbutt on Henderson. Now, maybe VAR looked at it and in the same way with the Neymar-Lyon incident, they thought that Henderson hammed it up a bit or was delayed in his falling over and they decided, you know what, let's not do this. But to me, it was a red card and they really didn't help Geiger in that situation. I think Geiger's got a problem though, not so much in the decisions that he makes, but in his ability to be authoritative. And for people seem to, it's open season on him. They crowd round him. They get in his face. They bully him. He turns his back too much as well and walks away, which gives them a chance to chase after him.
Well, I was going to say, though, is that him? Is he really behaving that much differently than a referee? Or were Colombia just petulant tonight?
They were that. They absolutely were that. But some referees just had, they meet aggression with an authoritative aggression of their own. I'm not going to bring up Colina. Oh, there I have. But you were never arguing with him. Or if you did, the argument didn't last very long. He had an ability to just kind of make the decision and swat away the John Terry-esque crowding. Remember Chelsea started that tactic?
Oh, yeah.
That happened all tonight. And was it petulance from Colombia? 100% it was.
England are now 4-0-2 against Colombia all time. Here's Harry Kane afterwards on exercising England's penalty demons.
We've had some heartache over the years with England. I've been part of that, watching that as a fan. So to be here and make a difference is a proud moment for sure.
You can hear his voice kind of breaking.
It's breaking, yeah. His cousins in Connemara, absolutely delighted. This is a win for Ireland, Andrew.
You know, I've been trying to figure out just why I said before the tournament, if I had, people kept asking me, the U.S. aren't in it, who are you rooting for anybody? And my answer was always, nah, not really. If the U.S. aren't in, yeah, I like England. They've got a bunch of Spurs players.
Now you've gone.
But the game just like, it just took me over today. And I was, when Mina scored in the 93rd, yeah, it really was. Thought that was it. I thought they're following the script. We all know how this is going to end. It's going to penalties. And I just, you know, my mind starts going right to the Tottenham players. They're all going to miss. JJ's going to crush me. My Twitter's going to blow up.
Oh, why would I? I wouldn't crush you necessarily over the Tottenham players.
Such a liar.
Can I do
one of the great liars I've ever known?
Can I do a quick test? It's called Are You an Englishman in Disguise?
Sure.
What's your thoughts on James Corden?
I've never seen his show.
Okay.
So we're not. I assume that's the wrong answer, that you were hoping for a different answer.
Should a cup of tea be served in a mug or in a cup, a china cup?
I mean, probably a mug.
Do you like the royal... Did you watch the royal wedding?
No.
Are you a fan of the royals?
Yeah, they're fine.
They're fine. Interesting.
How am I doing?
Benedict Arnold, good guy or bad guy?
One of the worst people ever.
You sure about that? You hesitated a bit.
one of the worst people ever? Just one. Where was the hesitation?
Just one of them, then.
Well, I'm not going to sit here and say Benedict. There's a lot of bad people. He's not the worst person in history.
Just for a guy who was so upset by the burning of our state's capital in 1812, he seemed to have gotten over it pretty quick.
Time heals all wounds, JJ. We were teammates in World War II.
So at what point do you morph into, from old big old Spursy Andy,
right,
into big old English Andy?
English Andy? Well, I mean, the fact that all five Tottenham players played in this game, the fact that all three converted penalties, I think it's also the fact that Kane is captaining the side. Like, it's a Tottenham player who's really the face of this team that's playing so well. To watch, you know, Tottenham have kind of gone through this thing over the last few years where they've emerged as one of the giant clubs of England, but they don't spend the way that other clubs do. So you would think they'd become kind of the neutral's favorite, and they have not at all. All I hear, you know, Kane was ripped this year after the Stoke City goal that he said went off his shoulder. Dele Alli is ripped at every turn. So I've never gotten that. In the battle against Leicester City, everyone obviously gravitated towards Leicester. So even when Tottenham has had this rise, the neutral fan has still not gravitated towards them, which is fine. I don't really care. I love them, and that's all that really matters. But it is kind of cool to see the entire country now get behind Kane, to watch the whole country celebrate a goal scored by Eric Dyer. You know, Danny Rose.
The whole country, yeah.
Of England. Oh, not the U.S. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about England.
Right.
Now.
Oh, no. Cause
English Andy is speaking.
It's tough with you sometimes.
You know, Danny Rose nearly scores a goal in extra time to win it.
Yeah, put one past the post.
Yeah. So it is kind of cool.
Are you going to start calling Jamie Vardy Vards? Yeah, that kind of thing.
I'm not there yet. Look, I don't know. You're going to tell me you're such a phony in your own right, because you'll say all these things to me off mic about how much you're enjoying this team, and then the mics go on and you feel like you need to play this role.
I've told you, as an Irish person with huge connections to England, I'm hugely conflicted about this, as are many Irish people right now, because we don't dislike the team as well. No, the media are doing their best. They are doing their best to kind of drive that wedge back again, but we definitely don't dislike this team in the way we would have disliked
you and all
sides.
Your friends are obsessed with this league, the English Premier League.
Yeah,
we have a long-standing for these players.
Yeah, I told you, it's like a Big Brother effect. It's also a post-colonial hangover when we like to see them defeated at times.
So
it's
when Dyer converted the fourth penalty, you were
You know what
whatever.
I was? I can't wait for the next chapter in this story. That's how I was.
Because you want it to
fail
spectacularly?
Come here. I'll tell you what I am. I am almost an expert at about England at major tournaments. You know I am. Mm-hmm. How quickly had I that email sent to you with...
Oh, yeah.
I knew every single penalty. I knew the song we needed to play. Because I've grown up with this. England and Ireland are inextricably linked through history and culture and through my own family. And I'm so fascinated by it. That's it. And you can't accept it. It has to be, oh, you're cheering for them, or oh, you're not.
No, because you've said things to contradict. Like, you'll say one thing, oh, you know, how I love this team, they're so likable. And then, you know, you send me, like, laughing hysterical emojis when Mina scores the equalizer.
Because that is, like, the most England thing to happen in a major tournament game. And by the way, don't suck the gas out of that one. That's in my red card.
Oh.
Even in the moment of triumph, there is still reason to go back and admonish certain members who haven't, of the English media, who haven't learned their lesson from 2016 or 1996 or 1990 or 1986. Or
go Kane?
Oh, no, not that.
Oh.
That for me is...
That's the sun at it again.
Yeah, that's not okay. It's not.
I agree. I thought that.
And it's also, I wonder how that works. Harry Kane definitely wouldn't have allowed his image to be used if he knew that those...
I mean, maybe there are certain photos that were just made for public use.
I'm sure the Sun had their own photo shoot with England at the time, and they used it. This was pre-tournament, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's not okay, and it portrays English people in a way that's just not true, you know? I don't know. It's classic them. It's classic them. But it's also, it was very disparaging towards Colombia. Yeah. Extremely.
Before we move off of this game, I guess the last thing that I would say about it from really a more soccer perspective, England, they win. They should feel great about it. I saw the videos of the Flatiron party in London. you know, people should be celebrating this and be loving it because it was a moment that doesn't come around very often, especially for England. But they need to be better. And I know they do have Sweden next, and we're not really going to talk about that because we're going to have another podcast on Thursday previewing the quarterfinals. But they do need to be better than this.
Definitely. My concerns about Harry Kane dropping off so much to be... Harry Kane played quite a large portion of that game in a number 10 role, which, I mean, is not great for England. They need to figure that out because I don't want him dropping deep. Maybe that's a tactic, especially when Vardy came in. Maybe it's a way to release Vardy and give him more space. I don't like it personally. It takes him out of the area you want him, which is in the box. Eric Dier and Henderson are... They're so poor. They're very, very poor. And it's a worry for me, that midfield.
Dier missed a free header.
Oh, good Lord. And if he's not scoring that, what's he doing in the game?
Well, and he referenced it in the sound that we played before. He's saying, I knew I needed to make up for that.
They don't. That midfield does not give you enough, and I'm wondering at what point they get found out.
Well, Dier came on as a sub. I mean, he's not one of...
Well, Henderson then. Yeah. That's my point.
So that is England. They do advance. They'll face Sweden in the quarterfinals. We'll zip through some of the other games from the round of 16. We'll start with Brazil 2 and Mexico 0. The Mexicans go out once again for the seventh consecutive time.
Dos a zero.
Unbelievable. Dos a cero in the round of 16. There's been a lot of back and forth over this World Cup for Mexico and whether or not it should be looked upon fondly, whether or not it was a disaster. There seems to almost be no one in the middle. Now, to see some of the things that Mexican fans have been saying, they are irate with the way this played out. And maybe some of that comes from the fact that they didn't love this manager to begin with. So maybe they were looking for reasons to be angry.
I think it was always going to fall on him.
Yeah. And it seems like they're looking for reasons to want to shuttle him out. I don't know. I guess I would have to say, I know this isn't good for, you know, the hot take culture that we're in, but I really fall in the middle. Like, there's just, I'm sorry, this Mexican team is good. There's no question about that. I totally understand why Mexican fans would be disappointed because it's a generation of players that have really been playing together for a while now, have a lot of experience together. So it kind of felt like this was a chance for them to maybe make a little bit more noise than what they've done in the past. But once you line up against Brazil, that's it. That's it.
I agree. I broke it down a little bit differently. I thought for a large part of this tournament, the coach got the tactics right. I thought, how well were they tactically set up against Germany?
Yeah, perfect.
Now, keep that German game in your mind. Uh-huh. They beat South Korea, did the needful, and went into their final game with 6 points. Now, they collapsed in the second half against Sweden,
yes,
which was an unacceptable bottling job by those players. Honestly, especially considering that they only needed a point. That's all they needed, and they couldn't manage that. So that was obviously a worry. I thought for periods against Brazil, they were fantastic. And the inclusion of Marquez, I think people are making too much out of that. It was a little bit kooky, but I get what Osorio was thinking.
The fact that he could only give them 45 minutes, though, now you're burning a sub at halftime.
Yeah, that whole part wasn't great, but that, for me, that's not...
And you say for periods, they were fantastic. Really? I mean, yes. I thought for maybe the first 15 to 20 minutes, they were very good, and they had Brazil on their heels a little bit.
But they may have emptied the tank.
Yeah, after that, it just kind of felt like Brazil controlled the game.
Even in the second half, I think it was at 1-0 or 0-0. I can't remember. Guardado gets the ball on the right-hand side and switches the play to Lozano with this wonderful ball. Absolutely brilliant ball. And what does he do? He lashes it, and it's defended. And it brought me back to a major thing and a major criticism. The last third, Andrew, for this Mexican team, for all their great players that they have, they've scored 3 goals across these 4 games. That's it. Look at all the chances they had against Germany. Their shot selection. How many times did we see them against Germany? Like 3v2. Germany were so open, and in the end they'd like it would be a misplaced final pass or a shot wide or over the bar or a blocked shot. Mm-hmm. And that to me is what did it for them. You can talk about Vela, Chicharito, Layún, all these players that they have, Guardado in the middle of the field, and Lozano, who's really come up in my estimation, but their shot selection and their finishing is what let them down ultimately. Yeah. That's what I put it down to.
Here was Hercules Gomez on ESPNFC on Mexico's World Cup.
The Mexican national team had it very clear, very simple. El quinto partido or bust. They didn't get there, so bust. But let's be very clear about this. They defeated the defending World Cup champions in Germany in the first game in very convincing fashion. The second game, they dominated South Korea. 6 points out of two games, and then disaster struck versus Sweden. And then you have to go in playing the fifth, potentially for the fifth game, against Brazil. This Brazil, Coutinho, Neymar, Willian, Paulinho, it was always going to be difficult. There is no shame in losing. There is dignity in losing, especially the way they did. Great effort, but I think it's somewhere in between. If you talk to people back in Mexico, it is a complete and utter failure. I don't see it as that, but I think if the end goal is the fifth and final game, then yes, bust.
Yeah, and you said it. Everyone's going to look back on the Sweden game. That was their chance to get into the right side of the bracket, which would have paved an easier path, and that was kind of where this World Cup was lost.
And that's one of those times when Osorio needs to be able to shut things down and play a different way, and he wasn't able to. Mexico still created chances against Sweden, but they were giving up tons at the end, and Sweden scored them 3-0. I mean, that second half was a train wreck.
Yeah, they came apart very quickly. And then on the other side of this, of course, is Brazil. It feels like maybe we're starting to see Brazil get rolling a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. But would you believe it? There's so much more to come from that attack that I'm going to say yes and no. I think they're on the move. They have a couple of questions. I know Gabriel Jesus has a great record in qualifying and goal scoring, but I'm thinking, Andrew, that maybe they need to switch it up a little bit in the centre. Now, granted, on Neymar's goal, he could have easily got his toe to that before Neymar did for the opener. So what do I know? But maybe they should introduce Firmino. Just mix it up, because I think Jesus is just a little bit lost as the pivot point at the top of the arrow for Brazil. Defensively, how good are they? They seem to be getting better defensively.
I mean, the one goal that they gave up against Switzerland in the first game has been it so far. And it's why they're really the most dangerous team left in this tournament, and why it's why they're legitimate favorites to win this tournament, because they're so lethal up front. Like you mentioned, with Neymar, I mean, even Jesus, when he's off his game, is still a dangerous
player.
Coutinho's been excellent. You can bring in Firmino off the bench. And Willian has been great. So you obviously know all the names there, but defensively, they've just been so sound, so disciplined. I know you suggested maybe they're even better with Marcelo not playing.
I'm convinced of it. Convinced of it.
Well, they're going to be more disciplined in defense when he's
Fagner and Felipe Luis, I'm happy with that. I wonder, will Chichi, if Marcelo becomes available, do we see a change there?
Yeah, I don't know. Thiago Silva is another guy who we've seen him on good days where he looks like one of the best center halves in the world, and then on other days he's lost.
He was very good.
And he was. So if Brazil can sustain that defensively and just continue to be what we know them to be in attack, they're the best team left.
And also Neymar continues to get fitter and fitter, which means he's going to grow into the tournament and he should be at peak Neymar in the good way.
I loved his first goal.
I loved the way it was created.
Back
it was so intelligent because he did all the things I want him to do. He sucked in everybody, created the dummy run. Willian burst, by the way, what a burst of speed to get around the side and then deliver the ball. Mm-hmm. And he sucked, all the Mexican defenders were sucked to the ball into Willian and he snuck in at the far post. It was a really well crafted goal by Brazil. And if there's more of that to come, they really do look like red hot favorites.
I'll have a little bit more on Neymar later in this podcast. But before that, we do have to mention what happened with him and Miguel Layún. To me, I don't know where you stand. Well, yes, I do. I've known you for years now, and I know that you despise everything about Neymar.
Yeah.
For me, this was two men acting like absolute fools. Now, first off, you're right. Whatever you're about to say about Neymar and the way he behaved after that happened, you're 1,000% right. He looked like a complete clown. He's better. You're better than that. You don't need to be resorting to those kind of tactics. You're maybe the best player left in this tournament with Messi and Ronaldo out. Brazil are the clear favorite left in this tournament. You just don't need to be resorting to that level of play against a team that you should be beating. It just makes you look so small and so childish. So yes, whatever people want to say negatively about him for carrying on the way that he did and how ridiculous he looked, I agree with all of it. However, is Miguel Layún out of his mind? What is he thinking? If you're Mexico, you need everything possible to go right for you to have a chance to beat Brazil in a World Cup game. So he comes in off the bench, and he's going to do something as stupid as that in a VAR world that we're living in now? I mean, come on, man. I know it was just kind of, as far as stomping on someone goes, I almost don't want to use that term because this was not a stomp
no,
in the traditional
sense.
It was
sense. Just a little sneaky one that could have gone badly wrong.
But he knew exactly what he was doing. There was no accident about it. He put his foot on Neymar's ankle.
Yeah, but it didn't hurt Neymar that
no,
much.
No, it didn't. And that's why I said everything about Neymar because right. he looked terrible. But you're Mexico. You can't have a guy sent off. If that's it, it's game over. Now, sure enough, it wound up being game over anyway, but you didn't know that in the moment. What was the score when that happened? Was it was still 1-0.
I think so.
Yeah, well, even the second goal didn't occur until stoppage time. It was so dumb and so careless from a guy who I thought was having a pretty good tournament and who I think of fairly highly as a good player. And I don't know what he was thinking because he could have really cost his team dearly. Like I said, they lost anyway, but man, was that an incredibly dumb move by him to even tempt the referees to pull out the red.
I don't think there's much more to say on that. I totally agree with you. I also think that Neymar does get kicked around. Of course he does, because he is that player. But, you know, you have to get on with it. It happened to all the best players in the world. Maradona, Zidane, they all get that kind of attention. And you have to be, you can't be like him. Also, you know me, I adore to read. It's important to read Tim Vickery's piece on InvestoBet. It's on his Twitter timeline about the monster of Neymar that's been created when he was a young player in senior football in Brazil in 2010, when people were still talking about bringing him to the 2010 World Cup as an 18-year-old, and he lost it, absolutely lost it, when he wasn't allowed to take a penalty. This is a long time... how would I say, cultivation of this monster of Neymar that we see on the field now, where he believes that he can dictate what is a foul. When he goes over, I believe now, when Neymar throws himself over and dives for the slightest contact and completely embellishes a tackle, I believe he now thinks that is a foul anyway because it's on him. He has built up this complex around him, and Tim Vickery's piece is unbelievable.
Yeah, and I read that actually, and he... Tim Vickery said something that was really interesting to me that I've never really thought about, but he said Neymar is polarizing in that he is a sensational talent. There's just simply no denying that. But he does carry himself in a way that is childish. And Tim mentions the fact that, look at his jersey. He still has Neymar Jr. on the back of his jersey, which almost serves as this constant reminder that he is a boy in the way that he conducts himself on the field at times.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Brilliant talent, but... Look, if you're expecting Chichi or anybody on his team to bring him into line before the next game, that's not happening. So expect more of this from Neymar.
Oh, yeah. This is who he is.
No.
I don't think he'll ever change. He'll be in his mid-30s playing and he'll be resorted. This is what you get with Neymar. Love him, hate him, but this is totally who he is.
Ken Early in the Irish Times said that on planet Neymar, nobody is telling Neymar that Neymar is wrong.
We move on from Brazil and Mexico to what is probably the game of the tournament so far. Here it is on Fox Sports.
Honda up to the middle. Courtois grabs it in traffic. Looks up, rolls it ahead. De Bruyne's on the move.
Good numbers here.
De Bruyne leads it on the right side. Lukaku makes the run. Lukaku lets it go. Chanley, go! Belgium leads. Chanley!
Unbelievable to watch it play out the way that it did. And the funny thing was, it was 2-0. It then became obviously 2-2 in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
The fact that it only ended 3-2, in watching the last, 10 to 15 minutes of that game, it could have been 6-2. I mean,
oh, every bit of it.
It was just so relentless from Belgium, and Japan were just looking at that clock thinking, let's just get to extra time. Please, extra time. Let's get to penalties as quickly as possible.
But Japan kept playing themselves, and that's ultimately what cost them. That's
amazing. Sending all men forward on a corner.
Everybody. But it was like crazy stuff from Japan, but... Do you know what? I loved it. I absolutely loved it. They are a team who do not know how to play any other way.
Japan?
Yeah. It's all go. It's
what are you talking about? Akira Nishino was furious with himself because of what he resorted to in the prior match, in their last group stage game. Remember, he said that they decided to resort to just, let's just stop playing altogether.
Right, that's the point. That was a complete aberration of how they want to play. And the one time they needed to shut things down, that corner should have been taken short and the clock should have been played out. That's what they should have done. And they didn't do it. They lofted a ball in that was easily caught by Courtois. And they have men and numbers that can't get back. They absolutely emptied the tank by playing this. By the way, can I say breathtaking football? It was absolutely beautiful to watch. They had this system whereby anybody in possession of the ball, there was a run being made, diagonal, people in space. It was incredible. There was a moment where Honda came into the game and Kagawa, who Kagawa, who looked like Maradona. He was just that good. He picks out a pass for Honda, this slide rule pass between two Belgian defenders, and I think it was Courtois made a brilliant save to deny him. Japan have played the best football for me in that one game. Nobody else.
Wow.
Oh, it was so enjoyable.
What a statement. Wait. By the way, you just made one of the all-time Monday morning quarterback comments that I think I've ever heard.
What do you mean?
And I'm so annoyed that you just said what you said.
Go on, say it.
You believe that... Obviously, things played out a certain way, so I'm going to look bad saying this. But you know what? I don't even care.
Go ahead.
You believe that Japan should have taken a short corner there? In their mind, this is essentially the last kick of the ball. I mean, the number of things that had to go wrong for them to lead to what wound up happening
is not easy to foresee. What are you talking about? That is total
nonsense. So you
think
Japan, in a tie game that's about to head to extra time, where they are clearly gassed, and if it gets to extra time, maybe they can get to penalties, but 30 minutes more of Belgium pouring that on, Belgium are going to win that game. They just are.
You're insane.
So for Japan to think on the last kick of the ball they shouldn't try to score... They have to try to score.
How many goals have they scored from corner kicks?
So take it short and let's just end this. No, you have to. That
well,
is
do a short corner. Do something else. Don't loft it into a goalkeeper.
No, you're right. It was mental. The kick was terrible, and Courtois played it beautifully. But
it was total
naivety.
But to
say that they shouldn't have even tried is wrong. They had to try to score.
That
may have been their last chance to score.
Andrew,
for all we know,
how can you show the kind of what would we say? Cynicism that they needed in their qualifying game to get through and not do it in that game. Take them to extra time.
They were
still creating chances. I don't know if that's the case. You don't know that either.
You just agreed with me when I said that game was on a pace to end 7-2.
I don't agree with that because I actually Japan were still creating chances after Belgium leveled. They were.
It was one opportunity after another, after another, after another for Belgium.
Maybe
they were
I've watched so much football that I'm losing my mind. But Japan still created chances after the equalizer from Fellaini.
I don't know. I just think to say that they shouldn't have tried when it was. I mean, it felt like it was going to be the last kick of the ball, but everything just happened so quickly.
The idea that you think they did the right thing is just incredible to me. Absolutely incredible.
I can't even imagine how much Nishino would be getting killed by the Japanese media.
Whipping in
if they do that. If they play it short and they just keep it in the corner and they let the whistle blow and then they go on to extra time and get slaughtered. People aren't going to look
throw
back.
Everyone
people
into the box.
People won't look back. Maybe throwing everyone in the box was wrong, but to say that they shouldn't have even taken the corner.
From the.
You had to. You had to try.
From the minute that Courtois gets the ball, Andrew. And he rolls it out like
you're right.
De Bruyne sees vast oceans of space in front of him.
Not saying I agree
drove
with
into
the fact
it.
That they
it was,
put everyone forward. Was, obviously, that
now,
was wrong.
Now Lukaku's run to create that goal was excellent. To pull defenders in and pull them out twice, fantastic. And Chadli to go like Ben Johnson sprinting towards the box was amazing too. Absolutely fantastic. I get that. And the step over by Lukaku, great.
Everything about it was
but
beautiful.
It was just opened up by naivety from Japan. And I hate saying that because I thoroughly enjoyed the way they played their football in that game. I don't think I've enjoyed a single performance by a team as much as that in the tournament.
Here's how it sounded on Belgian television. Spursy Andy was quietly pumping his fist during this one too.
Yeah, the French contingent there for Belgium TV and Philippe Albert, I believe, was on co-commentary for that former Newcastle player. Hmm. So,
what do you agree? Is that your game of the tournament so far?
I loved it. Everything about that. I will say this just quickly: a quick tactical point. Carrasco and Vertonghen on the same side with the Belgium operating a back three. Good Lord in heaven. Have you seen the scene in Terminator 2?
Never seen it.
You've never seen it? Well, people don't know. There's a scene where she's having a dream, one of the main characters, and she's holding onto a fence, and there's a nuclear blast, and she's just, her skin and everything is just torched, and all that's left is a skeleton holding onto the fence.
Oh.
That was Vertonghen. Well, prior to Carrasco being taken off, he was totally exposed.
The first goal.
I don't know what he's doing. The first goal is actually a mistake. He's too casual. He thinks he's going to stop that ball with his foot and it gets right underneath him. But every other time Japan went down that right-hand side, Vertonghen was scorched.
And yet the game will probably be remembered, in addition to Chadley's goal, as Jan Vertonghen converting on one of the most ridiculous headers I think I've ever
seen. Looping header. By the way, I've looked at it and I've looked at it. Yeah, the keeper's not in a great spot. He's come over way too far. But Vertonghen's put it in the one spot. It makes it impossible from the keeper at that angle to get back and get it.
If you ask Vertonghen to do that...
No, he couldn't.
He'll never do it again.
No, he won't. Total fluke.
And from like... I mean, it all started on a terrible clearance attempt by Japan where it was airmailed back into the box right to where Vertonghen happened to be.
Yeah.
But that ball came down... I mean, that was kicked, what, like 15 yards up into the sky?
Looping header.
Came right down on Vertonghen's head. He said afterwards he did not mean to do it. He was honest. That was incredible, that goal. And I just, God, I felt so bad for Japan afterwards. What a way to lose.
Bobby Martinez, his hide has been saved by a Jan Vertonghen looping header from outside the box on the left-hand side, Marouane Fellaini, and Nasser Chadli. People need to remember that.
Yes, but Martinez, it's not just luck. Now, the Vertonghen header is luck, but he did make the decision to sub on Chadli and Fellaini. I mean, his two subs scored two of the biggest goals in Belgium's history.
Yeah,
so he does need to get some credit for that. But I do wonder if he's going to have to change this back three.
I'll tell you, I don't think they can win Axel Witsel as well.
Oh, so the amount of space that he gave.
Inouye to hit what was a brilliant shot. But
Modric-esque.
But he had time to tee it up and everything. What a game.
Oh my God, JJ, I can't even believe
it. I can't believe that's the game we came to shouts over. Isn't it? Belgium and Japan was the game where I screamed at you.
Yeah, because you don't respect me. No one does. I understand.
I do respect you.
To think that, I mean, I said it was going to be tough keeping this under an hour.
Forget about it. Just forget about it. People are going to listen anyway. By the way,
they've all checked out
already. At this point, you must listen to the end. Because we're going to do your iTunes reviews, some of them that we've selected, and we want you to hear our red cards and men of the match.
So. We've gotten through some of the games that I was most... I mean, some of these now were... like I've got here Spain-Russia next. JJ, that feels like it was 2 weeks ago.
I know.
So many things have happened since. We'll go through it quickly. Russia advancing over Spain, 4-3 on penalties. This was really the game that felt like it opened up the tournament. Especially for now, England.
And the tear ducts of Sergio Ramos, which I'm delighted about.
Yeah, there weren't too many people who were sad to see that. Not that I dislike Spain, but he is that guy. I don't know. It was
terrible.
It was just so frustrating to watch. And I referenced this a little bit earlier in the way Sweden scored their goal. I mean, yes. There were moments where Spain did try. I don't mean to say that they never tried to make an attempt to score. They did score in this game. But my God, if you're going to control, what was it, like 80% of the possession?
1,200 passes.
Yeah, there just simply has to be, even by luck, by falling ass backwards into it, there just has to have been more of an opportunity to put goals in the net than this.
Yeah.
But look at
how they underused Costa. Like, we saw Costa beast Pepe on a long ball, turn and score against Portugal. Now, Russia really didn't. Russia defended with two banks of four. I mean, it was, let's be honest, 11 men behind the ball. But to not once in that game ping a ball in high into Costa's chest and get players playing off him. And when you finally do get a cross into the box, a great cross, who's on the end of it? Or wasn't on the end of it, but who's playing centre forward or who's come on for Costa? Iago Aspas. There was one cross comes in almost immediately after Costa has left the field. A ball he could attack. Rodrigo came in, I thought he was good.
Almost scored.
Yeah, but look, like, how does it take you that long to do it? Ping a ball into him and get players playing off him. It can't hurt. Do it once. They never did it once.
It just feels like with Spain that I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's time to abandon this style. It's so
you got to mix it
it's
up.
It's so inborn in who they are that if you're going to do that, it has to be a gradual thing. But it just feels like the Spain of 08, 10, 12, they had players who were masters of the style but were also capable of recognizing a moment. You know, Xabi Alonso could play in a long ball when he saw David Villa breaking to net. It just feels like Diego Costa is, he's good. He had a decent tournament. Look, his goal against Iran was one of the luckiest goals of the tournament. He's good, though.
They didn't get him the ball.
No, they really didn't. And I don't want to downplay what Russia did. Defensively, they were incredible. But it just felt like Spain was never willing to try anything different. Find a different way to break through. Fire a few shots from 24, 25 yards out. You have players of that caliber who can maybe score on those, and they just didn't try.
Can I just make a quick comparison? And they're not the same kind of game because obviously Belgium came out and played. But what you have is in Japan, not enough fear of the counterattack. And in Spain v. Russia, too much fear of the counterattack. When Russia did counter and win the ball back, they were falling over each other. They couldn't get a shot on goal. Spain showed them far too much respect. The reason they never passed to Diego Costa was because they were afraid the ball would come out. Because you know what happens when you hit a long ball. It's often 50-50. So they were afraid that the Russian centre-halves would head the ball away and suddenly they'd be on a break. Russia ain't that good. Spain paid them way too much respect.
Yeah, here's Steve McManaman on ESPN FC talking about Spain.
They were really disappointing, weren't they? They were caught between two styles, whether to want to pass the ball around nicely or, you know, play to Diego Costa up front. For the love of... I mean, I love Fernando Hierro, but why he chose five midfielders and had Koke further back in defensive areas than Busquets and then three of the same players in front... when they knew they were going to control the game and have more possession, and they couldn't change it. They haven't got the personnel up front, unfortunately. They had in the past. They haven't now. Aspas, Rodrigo, Diego Costa, the way they play is not the style for them.
It's fair.
Yep.
I think it's a distillation of what we just said.
I don't know just how much I'm going to blame the whole managerial disaster that this was for Spain.
Do you honestly think they play anything different?
Not really. No, I really don't. And I mean, maybe a couple decisions here or there, but ultimately... You should beat Russia.
They needed. Remember the six goals they got against Argentina? They needed a team that was that feckless in defending and that's what they needed, and open. And they were never going to get that against Russia.
Croatia and Denmark. Croatia go through 3-2 on penalties. This was really, of all the games in this tournament, I found myself feeling really bad for Denmark in the way that this played out. It felt like such a roller coaster for them in that they score in the first minute and had to be thinking, oh my God, look at us right now. And then they give up one in the fourth minute. The penalty decision in stoppage time or in extra time that Kasper Schmeichel then saves. It just felt like there had to be all these moments throughout the course of that game where Danish fans were thinking, oh my God, we're going to go on and do this, only to in the end have it come crashing down on them and Croatia do in fact go through.
I don't know what really to say. It was a deflating game, really, on a day of not great games.
Yeah, a lot being made after this about the way referees need to manage goalkeeping on penalties. What do you think? We talked about this after what happened with the Ireland under-17s.
Yeah, so they enforce it there, but they make no effort when they have video review technology to even try and enforce it in the Men's World Cup.
Boy, it's such a tough one.
If you enforce
it once, you better enforce it every single time. And if you do that, penalties are going to just become, it's going to become a sham.
What Pickford did tonight in the back of save, I believe like he jumped forward to the side, but his trailing foot was on the line. I think there should be a little bit of leeway, but how much leeway do you give? I don't know. I think it's another one that is really a grey area. I mean, you kind of... Imagine if VAR went back on all those penalties in this game, in the Croatia-Denmark game. The game, it'd still be going now. It'd be so many delays.
I know.
And maybe that's what they don't want. Maybe they're just saying, hey... The attacker's 12 yards out. He's got the major advantage. If the goalkeeper sneaks a yard or two.
There was one clip that I saw, because forward momentum is what these goalkeepers are trying to create. Themselves moving forward to try to cut down on angles. It might have been Rui Patricio, some keeper in this tournament that was facing a penalty at some point, starts about a yard, half a yard back
behind
his goal line. Mm. So he can start moving forward and propel himself forward with forward momentum while not leaving his goal line.
Right.
Which seems like
an interesting...
A smart strategy and a rule-abiding one, whereas other keepers are just getting away with doing this. I don't know how you litigate this sort of thing, because they just all do it.
I can't tell you how many penalties I've seen in my life where I'm like, well, he was off. He was well off.
Absolutely. Let's see. But speaking of that kind of thing, I'd have to look at it one more time, but there was an angle of the, to go back to Belgium-Japan for a sec, when Courtois grabs the corner and rolls it out. Didn't, like, it was almost, he almost Guzan'd it. The Guzan Jamaica. Didn't you think?
Oh, that it was almost outside?
I thought it was really close. I have to go back
again. How many games in the Premier League for
years? They all
years?
Do it. That's why that game, that's why Jurgen Klinsmann was right when he said that game was fixed.
You got to hit the Andrew brings us down button for this.
Let's see. France-Argentina. This was, if Belgium-Japan is the game of the tournament, this one's not far behind. This was really, really fun. It was so long ago now, I don't even know how much there is for you and I to say about it, other than I saw Arsene Wenger talking about Kylian Mbappe, saying that he is not far off from dominating the sport, and I think I agree.
I
really do.
I think he's 19 years of age, and it's amazing the season he had at Monaco, injury interrupted at PSG. There's no doubt his quickness of thought for his first goal is what really struck me. That was a mad scramble. He gets it out of his feet, drills it. Should Armani have done better? Definitely. But unbelievable to do that. For the penalty in particular, the burst of speed to take it past those Argentinian defenders. And then obviously Rojo makes it easy for him by just tumbling into him, even though he's kind of moving away
the
from
speed,
him.
Though. I would like to see, when the tournament's over, I'd like to get Mbappe together next to Juan Cuadrado, and I would like to see them race, because I think they're the two fastest guys in this tournament.
Okay.
Can we make that happen?
Oh, I'm sure it'll be easy to do. Can I just say, that was a game that suited Mbappe, right? Absolutely. The challenge of Uruguay, there will be no space in behind. France will have to do things differently. But he's a wonderfully talented player. He's got more than a bag full of tricks. He's got all the skills in the world. But, you know, I don't want to see... This is not a coming out party. For those of us who watch the game close... Well, there's a lot of talk, Andrew, about...
Monaco, a year and a half ago, was the coming out
torching
party.
Man City is...
Yeah.
Yeah, but there was... I mean, there's a lot of casual watchers, and for the first time... It's probably the first time really...
Well, he's gone mainstream.
He's gone global
now. He was already mainstream. It's a ridiculous
comment. But can we talk about France in particular?
Of course.
You asked the question, was this the performance we needed to see from France? No, it wasn't.
Okay.
It was Argentina at their terrible, terrible moment in... They allowed the kind of things that... France could play that way. It was individuals breaking out of their... Like, look at all the goals. Like, Pavard's goal. There was no great, like...
That's my new goal of the tournament, by the way. I know you said you're not ready to anoint it that, but
I loved it more than
Nacho's.
Well, because it's just the slow-mo angle was just amazing. But that was a moment of individual brilliance, unexpected, from a guy with 9 caps from Stuttgart playing. You know, Mbappe, again, was his own ability. And the goal, which was the breakaway goal, which I believe was the 4th goal, I mean... We were on about Japan naive defending. What's going on there? That's just shocking from Argentina.
I know.
So France are France. It's not the flair we want. It's not the collective we want. But the individuals bursting out of those shackles is what's going to propel them forward.
Yeah, I did want to say one thing about Messi. If this was his final performance wearing the Argentinian stripes... a little bit sad that the lasting memory will probably be him in what was it, the 85th minute, when they desperately need a goal to maybe give themselves some hope. Sure enough, Aguero did score in stoppage time. Who knows how it would have gone. But him kind of getting himself into position. You've seen Messi score in situations like that before, and it was just kind of a feeble dribbler on net.
Yeah.
You know, obviously he's done so much for Argentina. They're not in this tournament. We don't have to go back and say all that. But... Yeah, this was disappointing for him. There's just no way around that.
Yep, it was. And again, I think we've gone over this enough with Argentina on this podcast. I'm not sure how to set this team up with what to make the best for him. And it'll be interesting to see if he wants to go again for Copa America.
Yeah. Last but not least, Uruguay and Portugal. The only thing I have to really say about this one is that I think I would say that Uruguay is the most underrated team in the tournament. Certainly the most underrated team left, because I feel like they're kind of treated as though they're a smaller nation, but they're not. Now, look, I don't know. It's still unknown what Edinson Cavani's status is going to be.
That for me is huge.
And it's huge. It's absolutely huge. But you know, they're so good defensively, and they may have the best attacking duo left in this tournament if Cavani's healthy alongside Luis Suarez. And we haven't even really seen the best of Suarez just yet.
And also, Arsenal fans who definitely think he's signing for them. How good has Torreira been in the midfield for them too? Dermot Corrigan tweeted this out, and it's so true. They are the international version of Atletico Madrid.
Look at their personnel,
right?
Too.
Him and Godin, then and Godin, but they're set up to be a tournament team, Andrew. They can hurt you, and then you have to find a way to penetrate them, and it's so difficult. And I enjoyed. Look at the first goal as well, the long range 1-2. When Cavani picks out Suarez and then continues his run to the back post. It diminishes the goal slightly that it came off like his face or his chest. But even still, what a move. And then Cavani's second, where he opens his body up and just curls it to the far post. It was just graceful and beautiful. And there's something beautiful about watching them. I love that hard-nosed defending.
Yeah.
I really do.
It starts with their manager, who was a defender himself, Óscar Tabárez. And I think the way that they play, we talk about Spain being beholden to a style. Uruguay are to a certain extent as well. But look, it does help when this is now their fourth World Cup under this manager. I mean, he was with them, 06, I think, was his first in Germany.
Continuity of style.
Stability. We always talk about the importance of stability, and Uruguay have that, and they play a certain way, and it certainly works for them.
Do you think they've expanded from the aforementioned Tim Vickery's view of football in a bunker?
Well, yes.
A little bit, yeah.
Both the goals, I thought, I loved Cavani's second. The way he squares it up, curls it around the keeper.
That's a goal that's made for slow motion.
Oh, yeah.
Everything about it. I was when I saw him pull up with the, I think it's a calf. Again, the calf strain.
Well, they said there's no ligament damage.
But, I mean...
It's not good. It's obviously not good. That's our look at the round of 16. But, I mean, before we can fully move on... Round of 16 trivia. You ready? Here we go. Don't act like you don't like it. You love it. You're just putting on airs. You're such a phony. Ready?
I should punch you in the mouth for...
Then do it.
Three
you
times
wanted
you
to
call me...
all show. You've acted in phony ways. You love England, but then on the podcast, you hate England. You act like you hate the trivia, but you high-five me as soon as it's over. Ready?
Yeah.
Mathias Jorgensen scored 57 seconds into Denmark's match against Croatia. That was the fastest goal at a World Cup since this player.
The fastest goal at a World Cup since... Ooh. Doesn't Brian Robson have the record in 82 in Spain?
I hate you in this moment. Clint Dempsey, 29 seconds in against Ghana 4 years ago.
Oh, he beat the record. Forgot about that.
With their next game, Sweden will have played 51 games at the World Cup all time. That's the second most World Cup games played without having won the competition. Which nation has played more than Sweden without having won a World Cup?
Mexico.
Correct. 57 games. I thought you were going to say the Netherlands. They have 50. But you didn't. You said the right answer.
But don't forget Netherlands non-qualification.
For a generation.
Yep.
And last but not least, right now at this World Cup, the same guy leads all players in shots, shots on target, goal-scoring chances created for teammates, and number of times fouled. Who is that guy?
Neymar.
He is the answer. He leads all of those categories right now at this World Cup. And yet, all people want to do is focus on his antics. It clouds the fact that he is also awesome.
Can you be less...
He's great, and people just don't want him to be. And I understand it. He looks like a complete fool when he's rolling on the ground. By the way, some of the GIFs that have been... Is it GIFs or GIFs? I don't know what you say.
GIF.
Yeah. That have been created out of things that Neymar has done in reacting to fouls are just the best. Twitter, which I largely don't like, has been really on its game during this World Cup.
Have you seen the one where they've put like a child's stabilizer around him? You know, one of those things where a little walker, child's walker, it's got all these little play things.
They've not put
it around him.
My favorite is the one where he's rolling, rolling through different scenes in history and like knocking people over. but again, like, it's sad that the conversation always veers into that direction, and it's by his own doing, so I don't have a ton of sympathy for him, but don't let it cloud your judgment in judging just how great of a player he is. Let's see, in lieu of a mailbag, we'll do our actual mailbag on Thursday's podcast, but we had asked you to give us some iTunes reviews and in your review, give us your favorite round of 16 moments. And as you guys always do, you came up huge, gave us some great ones. JJ, what do you have?
Right. The mailbag will return on Thursday.
Right.
So those of you who have mailed us, we will get to that. Pedos started us off with, as a fan of Brazil, I don't have any round of 16 moments. Winning it is an obligation. I do, however, have a worst round of 16 memory, losing to Argentina in 1990 despite outplaying them for most of the match.
This is Maradona, and he gets the ball through. Can he just score?
Yeah, it's against Maradona, pal, you know.
But Brazil-Argentina.
That was a good Brazilian team. They had a player called Correca on it, who was excellent.
1990, yeah.
Yeah, Zed Hamilton. As a newer fan since 2014, I would have to say my favourite moment was the Chris Wondolowski misc versus Belgium.
What? So he's clearly not American.
No, no, no. He went, afterwards. He was.
Oh, so he's being sarcastic.
Yes, but he didn't give me anything else, so we're going with that.
Oh, so we have to play it. Well, here it is.
Flick to Wondolowski! Flag was up anyway. If it was up anyway, it wouldn't have counted.
United States pushing numbers forward, extremely dangerous.
Oh, no, he's on, isn't he?
He's on side.
Yeah,
he's on.
On
by a mile.
Yeah, yeah, he's on. That is a massive chance. It fell to exactly the right guy, too. Oh!
So the whole debate, because I listened to that call where Ian Dark says he's offside. Then I listened to the BBC call where they also, same thing, flags up, wouldn't have counted. And this, it's almost like they're following the same script. Then they look at the replay and say, no, 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 he's on. There is some debate as to whether or not that goal would have counted.
I don't think it would have counted.
What I read is that it would have.
Oh.
The referee has the chance to overrule the linesman if he thinks the
he
ruling.
Was 7 miles right. Onside.
So, and in the post-match report, the U.S. were not listed as having had any offsides in the match. Oh. So the referee apparently did overrule the linesman in that moment. So I do. It's still not 100% clear, but I do believe the goal would have wound up counting. Now, in going back and rewatching it again, we're so hard on him. On the show, like the Wando miss has just kind of been like a reflex.
Yeah, but
when we
didn't,
see a bad miss, it's not. It looks bad because it's him and the keeper and a gaping net. But I do think that we're a little hard on him. That it was a little bit more difficult of a finish than we give it credit for. Courtois is racing after him, coming at him. He takes it on a bit of a half volley. It's not as easy of a finish as I think it appears to
I
be.
I think the worst thing about it is that everyone in MLS was pointing to his great goal-scoring record at the time and were saying he should be starting.
It's why he was included on the team, was to finish chances like that.
And he did not finish. He hit that like a centre-back. Kay Reinhardt. I fell in love with soccer during the 2010 World Cup, and as much as I love Donovan in that World Cup, it is the Dutch breaking Mexican hearts in 2014 that is my favourite. And may I say, this is me now, what a wonderfully petty way to do it. This is Klaus-Jan Huntelaar, his winner, with award-winning commentary, actually, by Jack van Gelder of Dutch TV.
Toch zijn moment in dit toernooi wordt het een kiefje, zo te noemen, vanaf 88. De inkomen en scoren. Hij scoort! Hij scoort! Hij scoort! Hij scoort! Nederland met 2-1 voor.
Mag ik je zoenen?
Nee, er zijn grenzen, Ronald.
Oh, ga door, man.
Wow! Wow!
They're laughing because Huntelaar, after he scores, like, runs over to the corner flag and takes this leaping judo kick at it. It was pretty cool.
Did you think of one of our most famous Dutch drops when you heard that?
Oh, your guy?
No, the two Dutch friends.
Yeah, I did think of it.
Van der Grafschka of the Amsterdam police.
Boy, that was a brutal one for Mexico. Leading 1-0, Snyder scores in the 88th, and then this happens.
Marquez did make contact with Robin, though.
So that one is so interesting, too, and I went back. This is FIFA TV. Arjen Robben was interviewed, and he was asked, was it a penalty?
Was it a penalty?
Yeah.
And do you follow the controversy afterwards? Because a lot of people were talking about it in the interview.
Yeah, of course, but I think it's part of the game. You know, it's such a big stage. I mean, you were talking about the World Cup, and so everybody's talking about it. So that's I think, also the nice thing about football, you know.
Is it one of the nice things about football?
He also went on in another interview, said, oh, I dived in that game. It just wasn't that one.
I watched that replay several times, and I think I'm ready to just settle on, if you're a Mexican fan, it will always be a dive. If you're a Dutch fan, it will always be a penalty. And everyone else is just kind of, it's a free-for-all as to what you think. It's really, really close.
U.S. Yeah. Arsenal piles on. Every single time Mexico next gets knocked out, but especially 2002. Hashtag Dos a Cero forever.
It's a terrific ball to pick out Eddie Lewis. And Donovan's arriving here. It's 2-0. And the USA can dream of reaching the quarterfinals. The country officially placed last at France 98 are going into the last eight.
Oh, God, that goal is just awesome. That probably would have been the one that I submitted to.
CD Castano, Colombia versus Uruguay, and the James Rodriguez goal.
And James Rodriguez!
Oh, that is fun going back and listening to some of these memories from the round of 16. And so we will enlist you guys to do this once again. iTunes reviews, give us, now that we're into the quarterfinals, your favorite memories from the quarterfinals, and we will get to them not on Thursday's podcast, but when the quarterfinals end, our next podcast after that, which will probably be the following Tuesday after the semifinal, the first semi.
I would think so.
So there you go. Let's see. We're not going to really do a what to watch for because that's what Thursday's podcast is devoted to. So we move directly to
red card.
Let's see. I'm going to go first here, JJ. I give my red card to a small group of South Korean fans. I say a small group because I truly believe that these people do not represent the majority, but I make them my red card nevertheless. Upon returning home after being eliminated from the World Cup, the Korean team was lining up for a photo at Incheon Airport when they were pelted with eggs. You may remember a similar incident occurring 4 years ago when the Korean team had toffees thrown at them, which is considered to be a major insult in South Korea. The Korean FA said it will not press charges against the offending parties. This was from an airport police official. He said, quote, throwing eggs is considered an assault, but it's also an offense which can't be prosecuted without the victim's objection. JJ, I need your help here. They were never supposed to advance out of this group. They beat Germany in one of the most dramatic games of the tournament and actually finished ahead of Germany in the group. They narrowly lost to Mexico by a goal after really fighting till the end, scoring in stoppage time. It was a pretty valiant effort.
And they only lost
one to Sweden. On just a second half penalty. No one blew them out. They didn't do anything to embarrass themselves. Quite the opposite. I thought it was a pretty valiant effort from a team that was really undermatched at this tournament. This is one for these South Korean fans who decided to buy eggs, bring them to the airport, and throw them at this team. JJ, this is one that I simply cannot understand. I don't know if you can help me on this, but I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I thought, actually, in considering the lack of expectations and the way, by the way, all the memories they got from that final game, that was epic.
That's why I said a small group of Korean fans, because when they showed the scenes in the crowd, South Korea were out, but in beating Germany, the way they scored that second goal to clinch it, they showed South Korean fans crying in the stands, players on the field sobbing. So I don't understand why these fans would go to this length to embarrass their team like that.
By the
way,
my sister-in-law, who is South Korean,
yeah,
we were texting back and forward. She was on our family group text. She was so proud of the team.
I know.
And she loves when they do well, and she loves her boy's son. But she did not understand. I mean, I got to talk to her, but she certainly didn't feel like they'd let the country down.
This was so weird.
Yeah. My red card is for Danny Murphy of the BBC for breaking the Steve McLaren rule. So BBC do a match tracker and they have their pundits chiming in at different stages in the match, and you can follow it on the BBC app and also online. And it's a pretty good thing. Most websites have it. This was at English time, 20:54. Quotes, thoroughly deserved victory. Danny Murphy, former England midfielder, and the only former Spurs man to let himself down today. We have thoroughly deserved the victory. We have not created a lot of chances, but we have had not to go into fifth or sixth gear. Oh, Danny. Have you learned nothing from 2 years ago? This is the Steve McLaren rule, because Steve McLaren did this when Iceland equalised against England.
It's been the perfect response. You'd think that, no problem, start again, keep dominating.
keep getting pressure on the Iceland back four. The only thing that they have got is the big boy up front, Sigurdsson, who really, Sigþórsson.
Oh, my word.
Oh.
Talk us through that, Steve. I think we know what's happened, but talk us through it.
Oh, just saying. Sigþórsson.
I wish you could all see the look on this guy's face.
Oh, please. I know I've told you this before. We've used that audio before, but go look it up. And it's just basically the Steve McLaren rule. When commentating or giving your views on England, don't speak too soon.
So just what? Always be negative?
No, just be cautious in everything you say. Certainly don't say we have thoroughly deserved the victory right before Yerry Mina equalises.
That is a thing that happened.
Caught offside's man of the match.
I give mine to Japan. Their fans have been noted for staying behind after games to help clean the stadiums, including after the Belgium match, in which you would have thought they'd make a beeline for the exits. But the fans are not alone. The players did the same. A picture was posted from the Japanese locker room following the Belgium match. It was immaculate. You honestly would not have thought that anyone used that room over the course of the previous couple hours. They also left a note behind with the word spasibo on it, which in Russian means thank you. Pretty classy from a nation whose team made their country proud despite suffering one of the most difficult defeats of the tournament so far. Good for Japan.
That's really good.
Easy to root for when you see stuff like that.
Senegalese fan, Japanese fans in the stands, a lot of cleaning up at this World Cup.
With very few exceptions, we haven't really heard much about rowdy, poor fan behavior. And remember, that was a major concern coming into this. And, I mean, there was some stuff with Serbia that came up during the Switzerland game, but you haven't really heard much else.
My men of the match are, I suppose, it's more storylines than anything and what the World Cup throws up. So look at that amazing goal we spoke about from the French youngster, Pavard. Andrew, he's only had one full season in the top flight in German football. He started with Stuttgart when they were in Bundesliga 2. Look at that wonderful goal he scores. And the next minute, he's in the locker room after France have beaten Argentina, Messi's Argentina. And Didier Deschamps says to him, "You remind me of Lilian Thuram from France 98. That was in a Julien Laurent piece on ESPN. That amazed me. Look at Kawashima, the goalkeeper for Japan. Amazing double save. I know he probably got it wrong on the Vertonghen header, but whatever. He was relegated with Dundee United in 2016. Like, to come back to this big stage is huge. And look at even Nasser Chadli. Look at the way his career has gone the last few years. Relegated with West Brom this season. Mm-hmm. And popping up to score the winner in a round of 16 World Cup game. I'm just saying the World Cup allows players to write a different story to their career, a joyous story, and something that will last forever. And we always talk about guys who are country over club. Thank God for international football. It resurrects careers, it reincarnates players. It's just so amazing. And I think we've seen a lot of that at this tournament.
Yeah, it has the power to make heroes out of nobodies,
right?
Essentially. And you've seen it time and time again, and it is one of the most fun things about this tournament. There's so much commercialism and all that, but ultimately, when you're watching this, I mean, these guys are just so clearly playing for pride. There's no, all that other stuff, that's just not even a thought in the backs of their minds. And I think it all comes across as a very, with all the FIFA nonsense and all that, it's still, when you're watching these players, it still just comes across as very genuine.
It feels that way, and you know what? It just seems like, you know when they say, again, Champions League magazine voice, "As a boy, I always dreamed of playing in the World Cup." When you see them on the field, you believe it. It's so true and it's so raw, and it goes back to something in their youth. One thing, you were saying commercialism. Our fans are so done with those Volkswagen ads. Oh
yeah.
My word. Well, the tweets, we're getting tweets 2-3 a day about this.
They especially become annoying when they're for teams that have already been eliminated.
Like the German one.
Yeah.
The Iceland one.
Yeah. That might have been a swing and a miss by Volkswagen.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you're still with us and you're hearing these words, you, my friend, are one of the heroes. Because this is an all-timer. This is like back to when we first started. We're going to have another one of these podcasts on Thursday. Thank you all so much for your iTunes reviews and for submitting your favorite moments from the round of 16. Please do so for the quarterfinals. We'll preview those games coming up on Thursday. It should be a lot of fun.
Can I say happy 4th of July to everybody? I hope they enjoy listening to this on their long commutes. So yeah, it's going to come in handy. And also, I will tweet out a wonderful photo of me and Andrew watching a game at the weekend where there's almost a celestial, godlike light shining on Andrew. And also, Andrew catches a punt from me, which is amazing too. So I'll put both of those out on our Twitter. So at CO Soccer Pod, if you want to see those real moments of Americana.
That's right. Hey, to you I say.
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.